This episode of Creativity in Captivity is sponsored by the Curtis Theater in Brea, California, presenting Don Reed's The Never Too Late Show on Saturday, May 11th. Tickets are available at the Curtis Theater website. Get ready for insight and inspiration on the creative process from an array of artists, writers, and visionaries on May 9th, when Season 7 of Creativity in Captivity kicks off. In the meantime, please enjoy over 150 episodes hosted by Pat Hazel with a stable of creative guests in our listening lounge at creativityincaptivity.fun.
This is Creativity in Captivity, and I'm Pat Hazel. Today, I speak with a dynamic duo with years of individual experience in the music industry. Their passion for music and their love of the Colorado Mountains forged a friendship in 2020 that launched a new season in their songwriting careers as the folk soul duo Sarah and Shannon. Stay tuned for the awesome twosome of Sarah Jane Holbrook and Shannon LaBrie.
That spark of electricity, a skipping stone that sets you free, you're captive to a mystery, the curse of creativity.
Thank you.
So Sarah and Shannon is sort of a new entity. And so I was on Spotify listening to the singles that you've already put out. But I think to get there, we may have to have a little backstory on each of you. I did see a collaboration, Shannon. It looked like a music video of yours that Sarah directed.
Yeah, Sarah is an incredible director, videographer, editor, camera wielding master, really. But yeah, we initially started working together probably 2018-ish, but she would play violin on some of my solo stuff. And then she just started exploding in doing video and music videos. And so she directed, I think, most of my music videos mm-hmm. that I did. Over the last few years, were all directed and filmed by Sarah.
I saw Raining Hallelujah. And from that opening lightning strike all the way to the closing close-up of Shannon, it was very luscious visual storytelling.
Oh, thank you. That one was really fun. It was 2021, mm-hmm. so it was still kind of pandemic-y. So just the two of us went to a cabin in Estes Park, and we woke up every day, I think at 5 mm-hmm. in the morning, to drive into the park to film and get that sun coming up and that really beautiful light. Mm-hmm. And then we'd come back and we'd take a nap and we'd go back out around 4 or 5 to get the sun going down and that beautiful light.
It's amazing to see someone carry a very heavy camera across terrain in the Rocky Mountains. It was very impressive. Sarah got a lot of very intense workouts shooting that video, but I'm super proud of it.
Yeah.
And Sarah, your background comes from singing with your sisters in the group Shell. Is that right?
That's correct.
That was a lot of your music career, your early music career. So tell me a little bit about that experience.
Yeah. So that was much of my life. We started playing music together when I was probably 8 or 9, recorded our first Christmas album in 2000. And there are 4 of us in the band. So Shell was an acronym from our names. It was for Sarah, Hannah, Eva, and Liza. And we started it really young, which is why it was an acronym. We started touring, I think, in 2005. I remember I was 15 years old. We started touring and then we signed a record deal with Scott Borchetta here in Nashville, which is what brought me to Nashville. We toured and made records until 2020, and something happened. Global pandemic shut down the music industry, and we decided to not tour for a while. And when that happened, Shannon and I started becoming really good friends because we were kind of pod buddies.
You know how everybody had their COVID pods?
Yeah.
Sarah and I had a COVID pod.
In 2020, during the pandemic, Shannon was doing something called The Building Project.
Mm-hmm. So Sarah's tour got obviously halted with her sisters. We were all kept in our homes, and I had a record that was getting ready to come out. I was actually getting ready to go to the UK on my first tour.
Brutal.
Yeah, all of it got stopped, and we were in Nashville together, and I have waited tables and bartended forever. And there's some of my favorite local restaurants that were just starting to open up and were struggling, as we all were. And so I just figured out kind of a way to put out my record would pair with doing videos and showing how people in our neighborhood were opening back up and thriving and being resilient. And since Sarah and I were in the pod together, we were able to safely go and film everything.
Yeah.
And be a duo team, if you will, filming that.
And although you call it the building project, it was really the rebuilding. It was the return, the comeback.
Yeah, my last record, solo record, was called Building. So it was kind of a playoff of that. And then, yeah. And now look at us. We're all here.
It was cool that there were like cocktails that were paired with each song from the album.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was really.
I forgot about that.
NBC picked up one of the episodes. It was really fun.
Yeah.
We started hanging a lot after that.
Yeah. Yeah, we spent a lot of time doing that. And then our friendship just kept deepening throughout the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Also known as Sarah called it at our last show. She goes, we pretty much just trauma bonded.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. But you know what? It was a moment I read that you were at the top of Long's Peak. You were at the Rocky Mountains, which you both love, Rocky Mountain National Park. That inspiration to go back to the studio. When was the secret handshake made that you were going to be a duo?
We actually
on the way down trying to catch our breath.
Every ounce of energy had been depleted, and so we're like, oh, let's go record a record.
Yeah.
But it was like, if we both survive this, we've agreed to make a pact to make an album.
Yeah. So I'm from Colorado. Shannon's lived in Colorado. Long's Peak is the most dangerous mountain in Colorado, and not because it's the hardest mountain to climb, it's just the closest one to the airport. And so it's like, there's just a lot of people that don't know what they're doing that go up there and don't make it back down in one piece. So it was a little like daunting to go do it, but it was fantastic.
Yeah. And Sarah and I had co-written a song or two over the Rumor Mill.
Like well before.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like way before. And then Sarah had been playing on my solo stuff, and Sarah was playing live shows with me, just us two. And we probably joked about like, oh, we should do a duo thing. We should do a band thing. And then, as the years went on, it was just like, hey. And I know Sarah has lived on the road with her sisters. She's done music professionally longer than I have. And I have been a solo artist for so long. And 2020, I mean, talk about having the wind taken out of your sails, which I know that's true for everybody on the planet. It was heart-wrenching. I know for Sarah, she and her sisters were really poised for a really big tour with their album coming out. Mm-hmm. And I had just signed a publishing deal and had this record, and it just kind of stopped. And so I think in 2022, I was getting ready to get married, and we went and did that hike, and we had talked about writing and maybe doing some stuff together on that hike. It just kind of made sense. And we were like, yeah, let's go do it. And I remember we sat down with our friend Derek after we did the hike for a beer and some food. And we were brainstorming band names.
Yeah.
How many names before you went back to your own names?
A lot. Yeah. We came up with some weird stuff.
Club Equinox.
Oh my God. No, just
kidding. It's always good to brainstorm over beer. A certain amount of ideas are going to come from that.
Yeah. Maya was joking with us because we were in the studio recording with her, and she's like, you guys, like, you have to get a band name. This is crazy. We're literally recording an album right now. You need a band name. And after a lot of toiling about it, it was like, okay, we're just going to be Sarah and Shannon.
Yeah.
And Maya, you refer to, is Maya Sharp, who's producing the album, who I think the world of. She happened to write the theme song for this podcast. I don't know if you know that or not. And it was a very funny collaboration because she was working on the music, and then she would text me and say, hey, send me some Pat-isms, something nutty that you would say. And then she would convert it into lyrics. We talked a bit about what the muse is in your life and how it's this mysterious thing that kind of has you, but fickle. It's not always there when you want it to be around. And she made it into magic. So I know her power, and I know she's attracted the two of you. She describes you as a combustible duo. There's something very dynamic about you too when you're together. And when I went to look at the titles of your songs, the singles that are out, So Unafraid, Emotional Hangover, Unlikely Warrior, there seems to be like a thread that's running through. You're tapping into the struggle of the creative person in much of this.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that.
Yeah. I was more just thinking we are really nailing the two-word titles.
The two-word titles. We do have some one-word songs coming out.
That's how people love to buy their songs, is by the number of words in the title.
Yes, yes.
What you were describing, Shannon, is a form of grief, that loss of the job or the opportunity or the tour or the album. And people don't think of it the same way as maybe losing a family member or a spouse, but it really is your livelihood and the very thing that you hitched your wagon to. And for that form of expression to be taken away at a time where it was happening, where venues weren't available, we couldn't be together to do production, that stuff really does make you reevaluate your priority and your passion and what your purpose is. So I imagine that's also what you're finding is infused in the lyric now, is to tell the story of what you hope for and where you want to go. It feels like that prompts a lot of emotion.
It does prompt a lot of emotion. I think the two most emotional songs of the four that are out that we have, at least for us personally, when we are writing it, is So Unafraid and Emotional Hangover. And the really beautiful thing about working with Maya Sharp, her studio is in our neighborhood, so she's right down the road, which is amazing. But she really does create a really safe place to talk about our life in a very honest way.
Yeah.
And I think both those songs, we were just downstairs tearing up, talking about some really hard things that were going on in our lives. And that's a really beautiful time to be creative, because you can say what you really want to say. And it's really hard to be vulnerable. And so those moments when you are vulnerable, it's very special when you're able to capture it in a song. And so I think those two songs were very much that. And I think So Unafraid is a theme phrase for what I want my life to be: fearless. I want to be living my life not afraid. I want to live so unafraid of everything. And I'm definitely not there yet. But I love that song because it's definitely forward thinking and very hopeful to, I know, a life where we live fearless of all the things that I'm scared of.
The world is a place that is using fear as sort of a currency now to scare people into action that may or may not be appropriate, but it feels like everyone is in a reactive state, and as opposed to a state of imagination. We're overwhelmed with what comes through the media, or just getting texts every day when you're driving is a fight or flight moment.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Jeez. That's so interesting.
If you can imagine your grandparents having a mailbox on their car and a typewriter in their lap and their camera set up, everything we have is in this device that is begging for immediacy.
Yeah. It's wreaking havoc.
It is wreaking havoc. Yeah. And it's very overwhelming.
One of the things, when I talked to Maya Sharp earlier today, the song she's looking forward to, it's not released yet, is Born a Tornado. Is that the right title?
Yep.
Can you talk to me a little bit about it, even though we can't hear it yet? Or is it top secret?
Well, we've been playing it live, so I don't think it's top secret.
I like that idea, though, of having top secret
top songs. Secret songs. We're like, no, you can't. Exciting. We can't talk about it.
What's intriguing title, Born a Tornado, really asks a question for me. So
yeah, we're very excited about it.
Yeah, it was inspired by a Bruce Springsteen song that I didn't know. And then I heard Aoife O'Donovan. I don't know if you know that artist. She's an incredible record called The Age of Empathy. It's like one of my favorite albums, top 10 of all time. But I had her on a playlist and they were playing other songs of hers. And she did a whole record, or several recordings, of a Bruce Springsteen record called Nebraska. I was listening to it and I was listening to the lyrics, and I just totally interpreted this song as writing a song from the perspective of a tornado. I went into the co-write with Maya, and Sarah was like, you guys, you got to hear this song. This song's incredible. And Sarah looks at me and she's like, Shannon, that's a Bruce Springsteen song. And it's about a couple murdering and terrorizing the Midwest. It's like, oh, I thought it was written from the tornado's perspective. And so Maya quickly was like, hey, but let's write that song. So we ended up writing it. And it's very powerful. Sarah plays guitar on it. It's absolutely stunning. And she sings the majority of it. And it's very striking because it definitely relates to the humanity that we all struggle with in our own lives, and feeling like we're destructive people, but also kind of captures the nature of it too.
Mm-hmm.
And do we know it's from the point of view of the tornado, or we're just imagining what this monster is?
It's open for interpretation, for sure. While the song started out as being about a tornado, I think it's actually about people.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And we're back to wreaking havoc again.
Yeah. Here we are.
Yeah.
It's on the new album, the debut album that the two of you will be putting out. And have you decided on a release date? Do you know when this is coming our way?
Early 2025. We've got some work to do. but
it's coming. We think it's coming out this fall, but
okay. Well, here's what we'll do. We'll put it on a tornado watch. And then when it gets to a tornado warning, then it'll be increased and then we'll all go to the basement and listen to it.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. You can only listen to this in the basement.
Yep. Well, that's not what I meant, but I thought Shannon might relate because she grew up in Nebraska and I never knew the difference between a watch and a warning. So I always ran to the basement, but apparently you're still cool if it's a watch. Like you can hang out, go outside, take pictures of the clouds. But when it becomes a warning, you're supposed to be undercover and in a door jam.
Yes.
Yep.
So you can use both of those terms as you get closer to the release date.
Perfect.
Well, tell me a little bit more about when you come together to write songs. Are you both bringing to it some general ideas or do you jam? Do you start to build the music first and put the lyrics on? What's your process creatively?
Yeah, it's kind of a combo of all of those things. Sometimes Shannon will come in with something that she's been like, hey, look at this, or I'll do that, or we'll have a general idea of what we want to write about. And sometimes we'll have that and we'll throw it out and write something completely different. Mm-hmm. We probably have like 10 or 15 songs that are just like waiting to be finished. I looked at the whiteboard recently and was like, oh, yes, forgot about all those songs.
Yeah. When we did get back from Colorado after the Long's Peak hike, we set up a lot of co-writes. I think November, December of that year, I think we probably did 15 a month.
Yeah, probably like. Something like that.
So we had a really big chunk. Like we just really dug our heels in and went for it. And then one of those co-writes was with Maya Sharp. And we wrote with a bunch of different people and just kind of ended up
loving Maya.
loving Maya. No, we loved everyone we wrote with. We were just trying to feel out too. Because Sarah and I'm an individual solo artist my whole life. She's been with her sisters. And so we're also trying to be really protective of us, A, our friendship, and B, just figuring out how to be creative together and create something together. Because that's an entirely different dynamic. So I do remember, though, we had a rule. We wanted to write with people neither of us had written with before. So there was kind of a fresh interpretation of us. And Maya just off the bat seemed to be very invested in what might happen with Sarah and I. We were just very comfortable emotionally with her and in her home to just focus.
We had to hunt her down at a festival. She moved here recently and I'd met her at Americana very briefly. And Shannon called me and she was like, listen to this song, Back Burner. She's playing at Lipstick. Let's go find her. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, great. So Lipstick Lounge was having a big festival outside. And I went over there. And at that point in the Saturday afternoon, I was pretty tipsy. And I found Maya. And I went up and I'm like, well, it's good to see you again. Shannon's on her way. Yeah. We're going to write music. It wasn't that bad. But we're talking and I remember we exchanged numbers and I was like, no, like we really want to write. And she was like, hey, great. We exchanged numbers. And she was like, is this going to be one of those LA things where you say like, oh yeah, let's write. And like, we exchanged numbers and I never hear from you. And I was like, look at your phone. And I had already texted her. Yeah. So she gave me her number. Yeah. I was like, writing Monday, what's up?
Yeah. Proactive is the way to be.
Yeah. I think the bulk of the songs that will be on the record are either Sarah and I, songs that we both wrote together or songs that we wrote with Maya.
Well, Maya said that the two of you bring obviously your backstories and quite a bit of resilience and things that you have been through, that struggle and so forth, that really fuels your creativity. But both of your individual experiences are, I think, what makes it such a soulful experience for her to be with you guys.
It was in the producer contract that she had to talk about us in a certain way.
Yeah.
Before we signed it. Yeah.
She had to talk about
us. We're like, you have to say that we're resilient. Yeah, you have to say that you love working with us no matter what. Right.
Okay, well, I'll take that in consideration.
That's so funny.
In terms of resiliency, I read a little bit, Shannon, about you losing your dad early on and that he was the one that inspired you to learn guitar chords and song structure. In that grief, were you carrying that in your early songwriting as well, that homage to your dad?
My dad taught me how to play guitar and he taught me how to write songs before he passed away. When he passed away, the songwriting became a survival tool. I actually just had this memory recently. My oldest brother's girlfriend, now wife, but I remember telling her, hey, can I play you this song I wrote? I think that song was 9 minutes. I think she sat in my bedroom. I was thinking about that. I was like, oh my gosh, I should text her sometime and be like, man, I'm so sorry about that.
In the shadow of the government.
Yeah, yeah. 13-year-old girl just like, this is a hit. So songwriting, yes. My dad definitely, before he passed away, gave me a phenomenal tool and in a way to make it through. And obviously, I feel very connected to him when I play and when I do music.
Hey, American Pie is like 9 minutes. And that was a long time hit.
I'm telling you, the song I played for Sari was not a hit.
I'm telling you, play it right now.
I also, in my bedroom downstairs that was painted black, just so.
Oh my gosh. How old were you when this 9 minute song?
Yeah, this is like 13, 14.
Play my song. Yeah,
play it. That's
right. And how long have the two of you each been in Nashville at this point?
I've been here off and on since 2008 when we first came, and then we came and did a showcase and did all the Nashville stuff. And I was pretty much touring full time from then on, but I would stay here and then the summer would hit and I'd be like, never mind. And then I'd like go back to Colorado and come back in the fall, and then the winter would hit and I'd be like, never mind. I'd go back to Colorado and come back in the spring. But I came back in 2016, and I haven't left since then.
And Sarah, you are using all of your visual skills as a director of music, video director, and editor. You make a good living visually telling stories, musically.
Yeah, I've done a bunch of different stuff with that. I edited trailers for a while for online streaming services that I'm not allowed to like specifically say who it is.
No, but there's subscription services.
Subscription based that everybody has.
Yes.
I edited trailers for them for a long time. Learned a lot about telling stories in a short amount of time from doing that. I kind of do it all now. I shoot musicians with film. Come and I shoot them. Yeah. No, I film musicians, but mostly I edit. Yeah.
When you're developing a song, you must already be seeing it play out visually as you're recording.
Oh my gosh. I've always been like that. Even listening to other people's music, I would have a story in mind visually for them. And that's one of my favorite things to do is I like making music videos for my music, but I really like making music videos for other people. Because I can take myself out of it and just be like, I have this idea or I have this idea. And depending on the budget, right? Mostly it's like, we don't have the budget to do what any of us are thinking. But I've always been like that.
Don't you find when you're restricted by a budget, though, you're forced to come up with creative solutions to still make it seem like you had that kind of money?
What is the quote? Necessity is the mother of invention. Mm. Yeah. Working in the box is where some of the weirdest stuff comes from. We can use this. I have this. We don't have to go out and source this. We've got these things. And you just come up with the weirdest shit.
I was just doing a corporate event and they showed me a video that was sort of missing a link. It didn't make a lot of sense. There was something being sent in like a pneumatic tube or something. Somebody put the message in a tube and then dropped it in and then it went out of frame. And then there was nothing on the other end. It didn't really come together. But they sent us something in the tube. So I just picked up the tube in the workroom and I said to the cameraman, I go, can you just shoot through the tube and I will just push the envelope. Like we'll just pretend it's traveling. That the cardboard tube is the pneumatic tube. So we did several shots one way and the other through the mailing tube. So it looked like it was moving along with the sound effect. And then on stage, the other end of the tube was sitting by the desk and somebody just pushed it out. And it was hilarious and really low ball in terms of dollars and cents.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, somebody had to hide under the desk to push the envelope out of the tube.
What a great solution. Yeah. That's fantastic.
But that's how music videos can be sometimes. I don't mean like that, virtually no budget, but you do have to find effects and you have to find places to put the artists that are worthy of 3 minutes of visual storytelling.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And Shannon, I did a little reading today. So just, it's not like deep CIA work, but the book that changed your life was On Writing by Stephen King. Do you stand by that?
Oh, yeah.
You've read other books since, I know.
Yes, I've read other books. It's funny because the book I thought you were going to say was Pilgrim at Tinker Creek by Annie Dillard. But yes, that book is incredible. The best part of that book for me that I took away, and I read that when I was much younger, And it's hilarious. He's also very funny. I've never read one of his novels. That's the only book I've ever read of his. But he talks about sending out his books, sending them out and publishers rejecting it. And over and over and over, like his biggest movies of all time, his biggest hits, his biggest books. And he took the rejection letters and he would put them on a nail above his headboard. And I just loved that mentality. It's just like a very unique way of facing your fear.
Yeah.
Well, and turning the obstacles into an opportunity. Have you ever been to the Ben and Jerry's in Vermont where they make the ice cream?
No, but I've been to many, many fridges with Ben and Jerry's in them.
Okay. Yeah. As your companions.
Yeah.
At this place, though, when you get done with the tour, you walk up the back, they have a graveyard with headstones to all the failed flavors.
That's fantastic.
Like the names of attempted Ben and Jerry's ice creams. And it's to say that this was a part of what led us here. I think even if you go to their website, they have the names on headstones at the back of the website. But
oh my gosh, I bet they've got some weird flavors.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm definitely Googling that later. Yeah, that's very interesting. But that, I was going to say the other thing in that book that's incredible that he talks about is getting up really early so that you can capture whatever story or art or creativity is there to be captured. Like you have to wake up and be present to receive it. And he talks about sitting at his desk with a blank piece of paper and how many days he'll show up and he'll write nothing. But then there's that day that he'll write 28 pages or however many. And I think that book translates so much to songwriting, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, writing is something that you have to arrive to and not occasionally. I always say a writer is someone who wrote today.
Yeah. Or just showed up. Also, maybe you didn't write, but maybe you showed up.
And Sarah, you were singing and playing with the group from young age, but were those songs that you were writing as a family?
Yeah, my writing journey is a little complicated. So all my sisters are really proficient musicians, and there was a lot of competition growing up, you know, from my dad. If you were going to write something and present it to dad, because dad was the manager and in the band for a long time, it had to be good, or it was like, nice song, sweetie, kind of thing, you know? So there it's just like, I didn't show much to anybody for a long time. I wrote with Eva on a lot of the songs on the albums. And then one of the first songs that she and I wrote together was Stronger Than My Fears, which is a Shell song that got a lot of placements with that one, which was really good for my writer's heart, because up until then, I just didn't think that I could write good songs because of how my dad kind of reacted to my songs growing up. And then after that, I started writing a lot. And then I've written a lot of solo songs and written a lot with Shannon, obviously, which I love.
It sounds like that song may have been a precursor to So Unafraid.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah is an incredible creative, a lyricist, musician, videography. If I were to encompass you as an artist in one word, I would say the word is magical.
Oh, my God.
But she just really does sprinkle kind of this fairy dust over everything she does. It's beautiful and it is fearless and it's like unexpected a lot of times. It's just something I would never think of. And it's one of my favorite reasons I love working with her.
Likewise. Oh. I think that's why we work so well together, is because the stuff that she chooses, I would have never in a million years thought to do that. And I freaking love it.
Yeah. So it's, and it's fun too, because we both have had these experiences as well, being in the music industry and having many people tell us that the songs suck. We both have had these like very hard years of our lives, and you probably win me on that one.
Writing for sync is just one way to kill any artist.
But like in the music industry, people are not shy about saying like, that sucks. Why did you waste my time with that? Why did you bring that to me? But what's really fun with Sarah is we've been in this long enough to where we can write a good song, but also long enough to where we don't really care about the rules and we just want to do what we want to do.
Yeah.
And so it's a really fun, exciting time to be recording a project together.
My favorite thing to say, and I know that Shannon maybe hates it, Taylor Swift doesn't have any rules. There are no rules anymore.
There are no rules. Yeah.
Not unlike that moment with Stephen King, though. They're not going to know it's a hit. The safe thing is always to say no. The safe thing is, and I know in screenwriting, in sitcoms, if you say green light this, your ass is on the line. Everybody is looking at the guy who approved it. So it's easier to say no to more things than it is to say yes.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And there's
like, what have you done?
I know. Yeah. And that's true, though. There are so many people's jobs on the line for that. But what's really amazing is there's nothing on the line for Sarah and I. We kind of have this full freedom to be creative and do what we want. It's been hard for me because I worked with a publisher for a couple of years, which was amazing. And I'm so thankful for that experience. In the industry, there is a way to do things. There's a time to release things. You need a video. There's all these assets that you need. There's an order. And also 99.9% of the time, it doesn't work. And there's that little tiny percent of people that break through the internet walls and go viral and have this incredible sustainable career where you're playing for sold out theaters all over the country. And of course, we all would love that. But yeah, working with Sarah has been awesome because like we have this song and like Born a Tornado, we know that it's going to come out this year, but we're not sure the date. And is it really hard for me to not have a date to tell you? Yes. But is it awesome to look at Sarah and just be like, oh yeah, probably this fall. Yeah. Because yeah, we can do whatever we want.
And it is a birthing process. And you know, when you make a piece of art together, it has a little of your DNA, a little of Sarah's DNA. You don't know what it's going to look like till it comes out. And yeah, you don't have to know. You don't have to know what it's going to be. And then it's going to amaze you and it gets to have its own sea legs. It gets to show you what power it has.
I think it's true, like the no rules, but all the rules that we've learned in the past, you talk about like doing a radio campaign or all these music industry things that you're supposed to do. In the last year, I don't even know if any of those rules count anymore because of Spotify and streaming services and what's going on with the internet.
The AI.
And now we have AI. So it's really like, what rules are there? So it's very freeing to be working with Sarah and get to experience the freedom.
Well, for all of the damage and terrible stuff that the pandemic brought, those years where COVID's wiped out things, it also changed the game for kids getting a job. People are doing DoorDash and they don't have to have a boss, or Uber and renting your house. And there are ways to make money. And going to college is different. It used to be exactly you had to do it a certain way. And now it's sort of like, hey, I'm a social media genius. What do I need that for? There's so many different ways to approach your creative life that having rules is actually much more of an obstacle, because what it means is you're trying to please the rule makers.
Yes. Yes.
And they're ultimately not the people that are the taste makers. Those are two different things. So to get a People's Choice Award versus an Oscar or whatever, it's like, hey, my audience found me. I think that's the thing that the internet has done, is it allows us to dodge publishers and people who give us the thumbs up or the thumbs down. And typically, they're chasing the prize after the fact. They go to the Cannes Film Festival or they go to Sundance, and what they try to do is put money down on the prize cow and then walk out with it. They don't pay for the feed or believe in the farmer. That's secondary to going and trying to outbid somebody when all the work is done.
Oh my gosh. Are you in film?
I'm not anymore, but I was involved in sitcom writing, and I did have a screenplay option, which I wrote many versions of it, and I watched other franchises lap me two or three times where I would say to them, are we going to make this? Are we not going to make this? At one point, I said to the partner I was writing with, well, we can't get out of this business because now we know too much.
Yeah.
All of this work should be applied to something else. So we did convert that into sitcom writing, and it applied, but it was quite an interesting journey to be in those meetings, taking notes, and then finding out that when we get back to our office, the notes contradicted the notes from the other guy at the other desk.
Oh, yeah. Nightmare.
What's your diplomacy, Sarah, when you're given a note that's, like, let's say, out of an insane asylum?
I feel like sometimes you just have to show them, and then they see like how bad it is, and they'll come back on it. Because there's two different people. There's the people that like you can talk to and will see reason, and there's the people that are like, no, my idea is the only way. And those people have to see the idea. The only way that they understand that it doesn't work is to see it. Mm-hmm. But obviously editing is different than writing too, because you can build around it. And sometimes in editing it's just like, this is what we have. This is a horrible idea, but here you go. And it's just unfortunate when they see it and they think it's a great idea, and then your whole project's just like, you know, client is king.
Well, that's true. You have to have some patience to go through some of those phases to say, sure, I'll move that close up onto that person, but the story gets less interesting, but if you want to see it, you have to show them. That takes a lot of patience, I think. My partner, Matt, when we were writing, we were fast writers. We had a shorthand. We wrote comedy well together, and we could crank out scenes quickly. And I remember us turning in a screenplay, I would say in a month or two. It was really fast, very accelerated.
Yeah.
And the studio read it, and their complaint was, we turned it in too quickly. Not if it was good or bad, or they're like, you turned this in too fast. And that just doesn't seem like you took time on it. So on the next draft, he and I sat down and wrote the rewrite in 10 days. And then we waited 4 months to turn it in. We went to Minnesota and we spent the winter, but we didn't keep writing it. And then when they got it, they go, yeah, now this is what we're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. And they probably, did they say something like, see, when you guys take your time and really focus.
Yeah.
You like just open the bottle of wine and you pour a glass and you take it. And there's always sometimes a customer that's like, oh, this tastes like it's bad. And you're like, no, we just opened the bottle. No, it's bad. Can you please open up a new bottle? And so you go back to the bar and you pour the same glass of wine in a new glass. And then you take it back. They're like, oh, this is so much better. It's like, but it's the same glass of wine. It's very much that. Okay, so you want to know that I labored hard for this. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
There's a sense of entitlement that you get to be the customer's always right. I'm so looking forward to this album, but it sounds like it's a little ways off. So singles will continue to drop is what you're saying.
Yes, singles will keep coming.
We have one video I'm very excited about coming out this year.
Yeah.
But our release dates are not actualized yet.
Do the videos get released on YouTube or do they go through your website or how would we see?
They'll come out on YouTube and we'll put them up on the website and Instagram and everything. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me tell them about the locations for that. On Instagram, it's at Sarah and Shannon Duo and their website is sarahandshannon.com. There are 4 songs available on Spotify they can listen to. Awesome songs. In fact, we're going to showcase your song, Emotional Hangover, and this will give them a taste and keep them satisfied until the music video comes.
Amazing.
Thanks for listening. Take a moment to subscribe and we will hold your seat for more creative conversation and a weekly spark of inspiration. Our show is produced by Sweetwood Creative in Austin, Texas, with sound editing and crafty co-producing by Tucker Hazel. The original music theme was created and sung by Maya Sharp, with additional production support and sanity provided by Diane Johansson, Tony Deo, and Tanner Dykstra. Please feel free to dash off a review on social media to help grow this creative community. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, or visit our website at creativityincaptivity.fun. You heard that right, .fun, as in that was so fun. Bye for now.
La, 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 la. Staring at an empty page, stepping on a ghostlit stage.